And nowadays, the 4,000 Georgians are fighting in Ukraine. We all have to support in a different way the Ukrainians to win this war. Otherwise, the world is not going to be peace and democratic at all.
Du hører på Liberal Halvtime, en podcast fra Tankesmien Civita.
Welcome to Liberal Halvtime. My name is Matilda Fasting, and today I'm joined by Nino Evgenidze. She is the executive director of the Economic Policy Research Center in Tbilisi, Georgia. Nino is also a co-founder of the Fukuyama Democracy Frontline Center. And this is a podcast in this year's series about the countries around Russia, their history, their relationship with Russia, and their future, and of course, how the war in Ukraine inflicts these things. So today's topic will be Georgia. And thank you for joining me today, Nino. You are in Tbilisi.
Thank you so much, Matilda, for having me. Thanks a lot for inviting.
I think we can start with what I usually do when we talk about different countries and different regions around Russia, about the history of your region and where Georgia belongs. I mean, people will probably know if they look at a map, but just make an introduction for us about your country.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot again and having this interest to our country. I'm not going to go in deep roots of the Georgian history, you know, as you might have aware that Georgia is one of the ancient, belongs to the one of the oldest civilization of this world. And I'm very proud being the Georgian. And I'm also, in one sentence, how to describe the Georgian people, we are very romantic people, you know. I think we are the most romantic people in this world, and to go to the recent history, you know that the Georgia was occupied by the Russians last 200 years, and since the Russia is the main topic today's podcast with you, the Georgia was like since 18th century under the Russia occupation. First, we've lost our kingdom, and the Russian kings to take over to the country in 1801, and we were under this kind of so-called Tsarism occupation for 100 years. And in 1918, we got the independence from the Russia, and it was kind of like a 3 years, like a golden era of the Georgian democracy. Because if you look to the history and look to the how the Georgian state was at that time created, and the state building and the institutions and everything, I can say with my great honor and the proud that the Georgia was at that time one of the most democratic republic in this, at least the European continent, because it was the open elections in 1918, and the people were elected from the different political parties, and it was the coalition government, and even political party, the Social Democrats at that time, who was in the power, they were sharing their the power to the oppositions, and it was really, really coalition government running the country. With the independent judiciary and having at that time, I'm talking about the 1918, having the 6 women parliamentarians, MPs, into the Georgian parliament. And from these 6 people, 4 women were the ethnic minorities, like Azeri, Armenian, it was kind of I don't know any other countries in the world who were having at least in European countries who were having this kind of the experience. But it was so the short time period, it continued for 3 years. And in 1921, Russian, at that time, the communist regime again occupied the Georgia. And in 1921, we've lost our independence. And it was the most tragic, like, you know, the moments of our history, because since that time, I don't recall any time of this country that even in every 5 year time period, the Georgian people were resisting. And it was like a constant fight all the time, at least every 5 years against the Soviet and the communist and totalitarian regime. And unfortunately, there are some rumors that Georgians kind of benefited from the having the Joseph Stalin into the power, because he was originally ethnically Georgian, but it's not true, and it's false history, because the, you know, during this Soviet and the communist totalitarian regimes, there were like 300,000 Georgians were killed, exiled, repressed by the Soviet regime. And I come from the family, and like every second family in this country were like, you know, the exiled or killed or put into the jail for having the different opinion rather than the Russian occupiers having in this country. And my mother, she was in exile in Kazakhstan for 4 years, and she was kind of like, you know, the enemy of the country and the foreign agents. And she was 6 months old. Can you imagine? They put the, like, child, because she was like, you know, the agent of the foreign like countries, some European countries or whatever. These kind of things were happening in this country, and the Georgians never stopped to rising up and fight against this communist totalitarian regime. And we've got our independence again back in 1992. And since that time, it's again every day fight for our freedom and independence. Because if you look to the map, you know, and where we belong, it's a part of Europe, of course. It's a Southeast Europe, and Georgia historically always was kind of first country, whoever was coming to European like cities, starting from Osmals to, I don't know, Turks and some other, like, you know, the other at that time, the, like, you know, the enemies. Georgia was the first Christian country who were fighting for that kind of like invasions, you know, to and kind of stopping them to go
further west.
Further west, yes. And since we got the independence, every single day for us, it was like, you know, the kind of like, you know, the hell. And as Winston Churchill said once, that if you're going to hell, like through hell, keep going. And every single day of our history is kind of like keep going to this hell, you know. And I think that since we've got this independence, then there was again that Georgia was attacked by Russia. It was economic sanctions and the blockade of Georgia. They in one day cut all this electricity, gas, like, you know, the supply to the country, which we were buying from the Russia. And they always trying to use this kind of like even the economic relations to have this political pressure and to make you to say no for your for your freedom and independence. And unfortunately, in the 90s, early 90s, when Georgia was occupied by Russia, and we've lost the territories in Abkhazia, which is the western part of Georgia, at that time, I mean, world was not aware. You remember that the Soviet Union was just destroyed. Everybody were so optimistic, you know, that the Soviet Union, this evil empire, destroyed, but they were always continuing their having their imperialistic, like, you know, the mindset to get more territories, to having their global kind of interests, how to oppress their neighbors, because they, for example, if you look to this region, you know, for them, the Georgia was kind of like always kind of headache and the problem, because they know that if Georgia is doing something well, then it's going to be the kind of trendsetters or trendsetting something new which was going in this country. And we went really through very, very bad time period, because this war in and the occupation of Abkhazia was really tragic moments of the newly born independent country. And for us, kind of make and start something for building the new state or something like this, it was very painful, because can you imagine, we just got the independence and there was an ethnic clearance of the Georgians. 10,000 civilians died in Abkhazia when the Russians occupied the territory, and after 2 years we've lost that. It was a war there, and after 2 years war we've lost, because there was no international kind of like supporting of this, then the Russia at that time was kind of like a fancy democratic place or whatever. And unfortunately, they were kind of blaming us. It was kind of ethnic conflict or whatever, but it was not an ethnic conflict, because since that time, last 30 years, the Russians troops are still standing there, and oppressing the Georgian people. And the 500,000 Georgians were kicked out from their houses, And we have these IDPs, 500,000 Georgians from IDPs in different cities of the country, which is kind of like, was a very tragic period for us. But Georgians somehow they found the strength and the power itself, because for us the freedom and independence always was kind of main ideal or a part of our identity, I can say, because in everywhere I think that when the people are talking about what is your identity as a nation or whatever, our identity always being and was and will be to fight for freedom and the universal values, which are the democracy, the rule of law, and combination of this, defending these values and the democracy together with our history and whatever we are in this world, it makes a really great case. And why we are so you mentioned somewhere that we are the happiest people in the world.
Yes, I think I read this book about Georgia, and the author, she said she loved Georgia, a country that had, like she said, everything. It was beautiful and welcoming, and that Georgians would be, she said, the happiest people on earth if it wasn't for their neighbors. And you've just started on this neighboring talk here, so maybe you can also talk a bit about the relations that you have with other territories and also neighbors to the north and south. You talked about the occupied zones, Georgian, of course, and then you have Chechnya, you have Dagestan, you have Armenia, Azerbaijan, Turkey. There are other relations around you. So both politically and economically, how are they working today?
Yeah, it's very complicated region, and for us, if someone says that, oh my goodness, it's not the best location, whatever we have here.
Yeah.
If you look to the map and there's all this kind of sea of authoritarianism which is surrounded around us, it makes you feel that, oh my goodness, I have to really go to the hell. But it's still, sometimes it's kind of like, if you look, maybe it's a weakness for the Georgia, but at the same time, it's our strengths, because why Georgia is bigger than Georgia, with the tiny Georgia, why it's so big and why it's so important for the European countries or the United States, who are our main strategic partners, that they always know that you can rely to these people and to this nation and to this country, because we were having, from the European or from the American perspective, we were having our allies as freedom fighters, the people who can follow the democratic, you know, the path and everything, despite the fact that we are facing a lot of, like, you know, the challenges at this moment. And all this, you know, I remember when Rose Revolution happened in 2003 in Georgia, this democratic revolution, and after that started the Ukrainian Orange Revolution, and there were some, like, you know, the democratic changes in so-called this post-Soviet spaces. All these people were following the Georgian, like, you know, the path, because they were saying, if Georgians can make this, we can also do. And the why Russia started the war in 2008 again and invaded the Georgia, you remember that it was full scale, like, you know, the bombing the country, and we've lost, like, again, the South Ossetia, our one of our territory, during this war, and some additional, like, you know, the lands in Abkhazia in 2008 again, additionally. And for the Russians, they understand that if Georgia is going to be a democratic country in this world, and if Ukraine will be the democratic country, one day in Russia, the people will also demand for the freedom and democracy. Because, I mean, you know, that I remember that the people were coming from this kind of Soviet spaces and even from the developed world, from the UK and some other countries. And they were, like, you know, the following these democratic reforms, what was going in Georgia in terms of the, like, you know, the anti-corruption or in terms of the democratic reforms in a different fields of the state, improving the state services. And even the Francis Fukuyama wrote the, like, 6 or 7 case studies on the Georgia's reforms in a different sectors. Because if you look to the kind of, you know, the modernization theories of the different countries, you cannot find any example that in 10-year time period, any country or any nation made so many, like, you know, the reforms in a different field as Georgian done. I mean, we became the number one, like, a country again fighting against the corruption, and there was and still it's zero petty corruption in this country. Of course, the elite corruption is everywhere, and you can make it as a criminal case. But after that, you know, no one in Georgia remembers that if they pay any, like, a bribe to the civil servants or the bureaucrats, because it was so effective. And before we were one of the number one shabbiest and corrupt country in this world, but with this reform and with this modernization, we are starting to be the, like, a different countries. And why that was the reason why the Russians in 2008, you know, occupied us again. But unfortunately, you know, the world was not ready even in 2008, you know, to support the Georgians. And I remember we were going in a different cities to advocating that to get more support from the European and the some different countries in this fight against the Russians. And unfortunately, even the international world was going this kind of very strange direction, that blaming very tiny Georgia that we started the war against the Russia and we provoked them. And it was kind of like, and we were warning the rest of the world, guys, next is going to be the Ukraine. After that, it's going to be the Baltic countries, because we don't know how you teach the modern democracy some standards, but we know the Russians from our skin, you know, and we feel when they are coming to your door, you know. And sorry, but
no, but what's
after that?
Sorry. So after 2008, that's like 15 years ago, and many things just happened. So what would you think, or what is the current situation in Georgia today? As you said, you have been working with corruption. You've been working with state building and all those things that we know from Francis Fukuyama of how to build a country. And we've got now 30 years since you became independent. From more or less 30 years since you became independent from Russia or from the Soviet Union. So first of all, before we involve the war in Ukraine and what's happened in this region after that, just the status. What is the current status in the relations with Russia for Georgia today?
Because, you know, why I was talking about this 2008 war and the world's to not supporting the like Georgia too much, because the Russians used this opportunity very well to blaming that time the Georgian government, you know, that we provoked the Russians and we started the war and all this kind of, and it Russian disinformation helped a lot that we were the like, you know, main, how to say, guilty persons in this war. And unfortunately, it took the European Court of Human Rights just like 1 year ago. They finally, after 14 years, they put, they call it this name that the war in Georgia in 2008 started by the Russians, not by Georgians. Until that, you know, there was no international official like recognition of this process that the Russians started this war, because there was kind of international blaming, the Russians were blaming the Georgians, and there was some internationals did not want it to accept this, and there was a reset policy and all this kind of like, you know, things that doesn't make sense for the Georgians at that time. And it started kind of like a special operation by the Russian side to bring the this kind of the current state. You asked about the current state of the what is going in Georgia, and current state is that the one hand the state is captured by the Russian oligarch Bidzina Ivanishvili, all institutions under his control, and at the same time you have the picture, like a very strange picture, that the 89% of the Georgian population is supporting the Georgia's Euro-Atlantic Pass, but the government itself, they are very, with their actions, are very pro-Russians. They started after, even since the war started in Ukraine, they opened the, like, you know, the trade possibilities and the trade turnover with the Russia very, like, openly. Until that, the Georgia was dependent on the Russian markets only like 6 or 7%. And now we are with the trade, like, you know, the energy and all this kind. We are fully dependent on the Russia with this current Georgian government, which run by the, like, you know, this informal runner, Russian oligarch Bidzina Ivanishvili, who is ethnically Georgian, but he got his money into Russia. And, you know, then after this 2008, like, you know, the war, the Russia's, like, you know, the main interest was to change the government, like, you know, in this country. And they realized they cannot do this openly, you know, because people are itself, the Georgian society is very pro-Western, you know. They're following all this kind of democratic European life, like, you know, the style. And as you are aware, we just got the European Union candidacy status. And from the European Union official, like a president and the commissioner and all this, from this, all these people were the statements that this candidacy status belongs to the Georgian people, you know, because they've realized that these people who are in this country, they're not the part of the current Georgian government. They are kind of like the next election is coming in 2000, in this year, in October. And we are really very optimistic to peacefully to change this government, because we believe that these people who are in this government right now, they're doing, and they're sabotaging their own country not to get to the European Union and NATO, because all their last 5 or 6 year steps where all these steps were get Georgia very far from European Union and NATO and get closer to the Russia. And the people, it was a really recent polls last week, the 90% of the Georgian population is supporting the Georgia's Euro-Atlantic, the European Union and NATO, the alliances. And I believe that, what is going in Ukraine, it's very important, because for us, for the Georgian society, it was shocked when the Georgian government started to making the statements against the Ukrainian government. They start that we're not going to support the Ukrainian people or whatever. And we ourselves as a Georgian started to organize ourselves, to supporting the Ukrainian people. And I don't know if you are aware, but there is a 4,000 Georgians, volunteers who are fighting in Ukraine to support the Ukrainian people. It's the largest foreign, the battalion who are fighting in Ukraine to support the Ukrainian people. And we already lost the 62 people, our soldiers there, which is again makes us number one country after Ukrainians with the casualties, which means that people's approach, we feel that it's our war because we know the better than anyone else. And we're sure that when Ukraine will win this war, it's going to be victory for Georgians. It's going to be the victory for every freedom fighters and freedom lovers who wants to get out from this kind of Russian imperialistic, the pressure, because we know how bad it is to live under this, the occupation and annexation. And no one can teach us how we have to, fight or understand what the Russia's, the interest is in this country. And we believe that they should be and they must be defeated. Otherwise, if they're not going to lose this war, they will never understand that. They first have to lose. And everybody who is trying, in my opinion, of course, who wants to put the Ukrainians into the negotiation table and pushing them that, give this or that territory to the Russians to make them happy, this is disaster. Because if someone, I don't know, any Italian or Belgium or German or whoever or American politicians wants to make Russia happy, they can sacrifice their Santa Barbara, Baden-Baden, I don't know, whatever territories or Lake Como. Why Georgians and Ukrainians have to sacrifice their territories or their lands to make the Russians happy? And if we are fighting with the devil empires and if we are... And Ukrainians, they are sacrificing themselves for all of us, not only for Georgians or not only Ukrainians. It's the fight for, I don't know, Norwegians, Swedes, any European countries who are defending the same values, the democratic values. And these fights are what the Ukrainians sacrificing right now. It's a fight for European security and European future, I strongly believe. And I'm sure that we will win this week, this war, and Ukrainians will win this war for sure. I'm pretty sure in this.
So not only, I understand that you're really hopeful for this, and of course we are also here in Norway. We actually have a border with Russia as well, up in the north.
I know.
So yes, but you said the elections, that you are looking forward to the election in Georgia this coming autumn, you said?
Yes, in October.
Yes, in October. And I was wondering if you can describe a bit about the opposition, the people that are maybe in your view, the possibilities of getting into power, forming a new government, and how the press and everything is working in Georgia right now. Because as you said, your government is pro-Russian right now, and that's those kind of governments will try to stop newspapers, everything that they can in order to hinder the opposition to become strong. So tell me a bit about that, and then we can maybe go into to Ukraine and the situation that you see from your side, how it's possible to make the Ukrainians win. But that is the second part of the question. So let's go into the opposition first.
You know, I mean, if you look to this Russia playbook, what did Putin did to when he came to the power, you know, you can put this like a Russia's or Putin's calendar since he came to the power, and the current Georgian government's playbook, the calendar for last 10 years, well, how they were following the same steps that Putin was doing into the Russia. And they just they oppressed this, they started with the media. And you remember the head of the independent media, Tavari channel, the Nika Guaramia, was sitting into the jail for 1 year. And with this strong coalition of the civil society organizations and our international donors and the partners, we made it this case that he's free now, you know. I think that Vladimir Putin and the Putin's regime and the current pro-Russian government of Georgia, they miscalculated. I mean, they calculated everything, but they cannot. They were mistaken in one, the line, which is the Georgian people, who are not the same as the Russian society. You know, I mean, they are oppressing the civil society organization. They're attacking us every single day. You know, and when I was talking about with my Russian colleagues, now they are in exile outside of the Russia, and I have a lot of friends, you know. And so even the similar cases, what is going right now in Georgia, they left the country, you know. I mean, here, no one from the civil society organization, from the media, we're not leaving this country. We believe that it's our country and no one is going to fight on behalf of us, you know. We can get only international support if they see that these people, this population really are in democratic path, you know? And why we've got this candidate status? Because the Europeans recognize that, look at these people, you know? Last year, 6 or 7 times, all country was in the streets, you know? And there was a Russian law against the civil society organizations, this foreign agent law, which after the peoples and this young generation went to the streets, and 160,000 people were standing in the streets for 5 or 6 days, you know, to supporting the Ukraine is the same amount. I mean, the people are very, critical and showing their protest. And after this, the protests, rallies, the government recalled this, the Russian law against the civil society organizations. They made the free, the Nika Guaramia, head of this independent channel. It's everyday fight, you know, but it's all is connected. If someone thinks that the war going in Ukraine is the different story, and the things this having in Georgia, this pro-Russian oligarch in this country, is something different story, and the oppression of the Moldova, what is going right now there, is something different story. They're wrong, you know, because it's for Russians, it's kind of one puzzle of their big picture, how they want to get more territories and occupy again, and creating this, restoring the Soviet Union.
Soviet Union, yeah.
Yes. Mm. They want to build this Iron Curtain here in this Black Sea. And for that purpose, of course, they need the Georgia and Ukraine to their under their sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. And we're fighting just to, like, you know, for our freedom and independence. And we think that if the world is going to be stand together, and it was kind of nowadays, this getting this candidate status was kind of like, you know, the energizer for
the
opposition and for the civil society organization and for everybody, because it will give us it anyway. The framework of being the part of the European Union is squeezing the space for the authoritarian regimes, you know, and especially this kind of pro-Russian oligarchic regime, whatever we have in Georgia right now. And the opposition is very weak because last 10 years, unfortunately, I was mentioning this like a Russian playbook, you know, and the Bidzina Ivanishvili, this Russian oligarch, did everything to weakening the Georgian opposition. They are very fragmenting. But I believe that, you know, I mean, I don't like to blaming in this kind of situations, in the situation of the state capture, blaming the opposition. I think we all have to support. And the last election, if you look to the, like, how the votes were spread, you know, and the, by the way, opposition altogether got more than 52% last elections, which means that the people were looking for this kind of collaborative governments and coalitions. And the people, they were expecting to having the, like, a pluralistic, like, a political parties, everybody can represent it there. But for that purpose, to having this free and fair elections, we really need this kind of long-run observation missions, because in the election day, nothing is happening here. You cannot find anything which can be any, like, it's happening all the time before the elections, you know, the vote, like bribing the different, like, you know, the different stakeholders, including the, you know, the bureaucrats. And recent years, the part of the, like, you know, the share of the state increased in the Georgian GDP, and the government is using, like, you know, the state institutions state is a main employer, you know. And which means that all this 20% of the administrative, like, resources is going to go to support the current government or whatever. But the people, they are very critical. And we believe that if opposition is going to find some kind of way, at least these very small parties, to reuniting to pass this 5% barrier, you know, 5% threshold, then I hope that we will get this multi-party, not kind of two parties, only Georgian Dream or the National Movement, which belongs to the former president of Georgia, Mikhail Saakashvili, who is in a prison right now. But also it will be a good chance to other parties also to get to the parliament and to having this kind of multi-party democracy represented in coming 2024 election time. I hope.
You hope, yeah. I obviously you do, and we do as well. So what do you think we in Europe or Norway or in the European Union or other countries, Western countries, what should we be aware of? What can we be doing in order to help you to create a viable opposition or somebody that might be getting a fair opportunity to form a new government? As you said, that government will probably be, if it happens, part of different political parties and not maybe a coalition, as you said, not only one other strong opposition party. And we are about 7-8 months now until your election. So what do you do? What can we do? What should one be aware of in order to help you get through these elections with a good result?
Yeah. First of all, you know, it's not only connected with the internal affairs. First of all, I can say that the victory of Ukraine is going to be vital for everybody, and especially for us as well. And for the what kind of help we can get from our partners and the European countries, and even from the Norway, it's to pay more attention to this part of the world, because, I mean, and also to having this kind of long standing, the like observative missions here, to kind of not a pressure, but to demand from the government to following the democratic path and do everything from your end to support the democratic like forces here in this country. I mean, the free media and the civil society organization, who is kind of guarantee for the democratic, like, you know, the solutions here in this country. And I think do whatever you were doing before it was cool, you know, before you, because, I mean, you see the picture, how the world is operating, all these authoritarians, they are trying to get together and kind of all liberal Democrat followers, they're kind of like chaotic and not united. And for us, for the people who really values this like a liberal democracy, they have to stand together in Georgia, in Oslo, or in somewhere else, you know, because if we are the this kind of community who wants to have this Europe whole and free at peace, idea to keep and to have this idea forever, we have to stand together to defending the democratic values. And we really value our partners and our European and American partners in this. And we hope that they're going to not leave us alone in this fight, you know, because once they left alone us, in 2008, it brought more problems to the world, you know?
Yeah.
And why the Ukraine needs the West support right now, that then after that, if something bad happens, you know, then next is going to be the some other countries, even the members of the NATO or the European Union. I strongly believe in this. But we want to avoid this, you know.
And together. Finally, we've been talking a bit about Ukraine, of course, and the wars going on there. And as you said, you want the Ukrainians to win, like all other Europeans really want that as well. And of course, we don't have to bring in elections and things in the United States. But what do you think can be done or should be done in order to make sure that the Ukrainians win, or that Ukraine win?
You know, I was like a few weeks ago in Brussels, there was like a very high level like a conference, and from the Roberta Metsola to the high level, like, you know, the European Union officials were there, and there was like, you know, the chairman of the Parliament of Ukraine, and it was in supporting the Ukraine, and there was a data, you know, the which countries how much from their GDP share is like supporting the Ukraine, and it's kind of like, you know, was very depressing, because it's not enough, you know. If we want to Ukrainians to win this war, and in 21st century there is like a different type of war. It's not kind of only, you know, you provide some like, you know, the rockets or whatever, and the Ukrainians can win this war. We need more support for Ukrainians, because otherwise they cannot. One of the American General Ben Hodges, if you are aware, he told that we never send our, like, you know, the troops if the sky is not safe. And unfortunately, NATO and like NATO, they don't have this, like, you know, the close the sky policy. Unfortunately, they have to close the sky, you know, because otherwise, I mean, from the Ukrainian side, and if you are not providing them with the equipment and the rockets and enough stuff, how they're going to win this war? We need more support, not only like a statement that we are supporting the Ukrainians or putting the flags, but real support. Unfortunately, the Georgians were the very poor country. You know, we don't have any weapons. And we were having the war with Russia for 5 days without any weapons, any support and anything. For 5 days, we stand and we were fighting. And the Ukrainians doing this almost like 2 years. In February, it's going to be the 2 years, yes? And somehow the politicians in different European or American countries have to explain to their people that this is their war as well. They have to feel like Georgians feel it, you know, because I mentioned before that the 4,000 Georgians, and you know, in 2008, what was the Georgian armies, like, you know, we were the 4,000 at that time. And nowadays, the 4,000 Georgians are fighting in Ukraine. We all have to support in a different way the Ukrainians to win this war. Otherwise, the world is not going to be peace and democratic at all. And we have to somehow to explain to all the population of the European countries that it's their war as well, you know.
Maybe that's a good,
it's not happening
well,
it's territories, but it's their war as well.
It's a bit somber to end the conversation, Nino, but I'm really happy that you joined me today because you explained how the situation in your country, and also I think giving us hope that you are really working in order to change your government, and that the Western support and of course the status to be for the status that you got from the European Union is important. So I would just have to say thank you for your time today, Nino.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Until the victory. You know, I love this kind of like, you know, when we're talking about the West stand together, I want the European Union and America not only, it's not enough to stand stand up to the Putin, but we all want to send the Vladimir Putin to the hell. This is main, like, you know, the goal for us. We don't want Europe just standing up together. We want them to send the Vladimir Putin to the hell. This is main objective and the main goal for us.
Well, I think we can agree. Thank you, Nino. And thanks also to the listeners that you listened to this podcast today. And if you like Liberal Halvtime, you must, of course, rate us and recommend us and give us feedback using my email address, matilda@civita.no, or my colleague, eirik@civita.no. Thanks again for listening and welcome back.
Du hører på Liberal Halvtime. En podcast fra Tankesmien Civita.
Moderne medier.